Hello and welcome to the Master of Demon Gorge podcast. Today we're talking about Yasir Shivaza and the Dongan. So I recently read Kingdom of Characters, The Language Revolution That Made China Modern by Professor Jing Zhu of Yale, which is a Pulitzer Prize finalist, and which, setting aside a handful of quibbles, I would recommend. At one point, the book talks about the Dongan people of Central Asia and one of their most significant cultural figures, Yasir Shivaza. I thought we'd talk about their story today. The Dongan people, in Russian the name can be turned into an adjective, Donganski, are, put simply, the Muslim minority in China, known as the Hui. Certainly they identify themselves as such. Hui people who migrated into the Russian Empire, which subsequently became the Soviet Union, which subsequently dissolved into the Central Asian republics. So let's back up for a moment first and talk about the Hui people of China. The Hui people are spread across China, but are concentrated in the northwest. Their racial makeup is complicated, a mixture of Mongol, Persian, Turkic, Kushan, Arab, Sogdian, Scythian, and of course, Han Chinese. For the most part, though, you likely cannot pick out a Hui person from a Chinese crowd based on physical appearance alone. They have been a part of Chinese society for many centuries. Their name, Hui, possibly goes back to the Tang Dynasty, so 8th century, drawing on the ancient transliteration for the name of the Uyghurs. Although Hui also means to return in Chinese, so an alternate theory is that the name refers to the Islamic practice of going on the Hajj, then coming home. That would make Hui the equivalent of Haji. And Huijiao, the religion of the Hui, is one way of saying Islam in Chinese. During the Mongol era, many of them served as government officials because the Mongol overlords didn't trust the Han Chinese. And on this podcast, we've talked about General Bai Chongxi and his son, the pioneering Taiwanese novelist Bai Xianyong. The Bai family are Muslim Hui people from southwestern China. But okay, so the Hui people live in China, but the Dongan people, who self-identify as being Hui, live in the Central Asian republics of the former Soviet Union, particularly Kyrgyzstan and Kazakhstan. So what happened there? Well, perhaps we can begin with the Taiping Heavenly Kingdom. You've surely heard about it, the Christian-inspired rebel movement that, from 1851 to 1864, brought chaos to much of China and caused a civil war that killed perhaps 10 million people, and was the third deadliest war in human history. And while that rebellion was going on, other groups that harbored grievances against the Qing dynasty thought they saw an opportunity. With the Qing court preoccupied with the Taiping, perhaps they too could start something. So the Nian Rebellion began in 1853, and the Hui Muslims of the provinces of Shanxi and Gansu launched their rebellion in 1862. That rebellion burned for several years before the Qing court finally put a capable official in charge of suppressing it. This was none other than Zuo Zongtang, the General Zhou who a century later would end up having a chicken dish named after him. And we've talked about Zuo Zongtang in passing on this podcast before. He was one of the most significant political figures of the late Qing. So in 1868, Zhou Zhongtang took over the governorship of the provinces of Gansu and Shanxi. And he proceeded to suppress the rebellion step by careful step, more or less succeeding by 1873. This war, the rebellion and the Qing government's suppression of it, killed millions and displaced millions more. And as the rebellion failed, a group of Hui people, afraid that they might suffer terrible repercussions at the hands of the Qing government, migrated across the expanse of Xinjiang into the Russian Empire. They were the first wave of migrants who became the Donggan. But again, as we've talked about in passing on this podcast, during this period of the Russian-British Great Game, so-called, Imperial Russia was repeatedly trying to infiltrate China's northwestern frontier. So at one point, the Russians seized the town of Yili in Xinjiang. Although Zhou Zhongtang reasserted Chinese control of Xinjiang, he could not go up directly against the Russian Empire and expel the Russians from Yili. So Russia in the end only gave up control of Yili in 1881 in the wake of the Treaty of Yili, also known as the Treaty of St. Petersburg. Under this treaty, the Hui and the Uyghur people of Xinjiang could elect to migrate into the Russian Empire, which of course by this time had conquered most of Central Asia. Some of them made this choice, mostly moving into the Sokuluk area in northern Kyrgyzstan. They were the second group of Donggan. There's a great deal of mystery surrounding the ethnonym Donggan. Within the former Soviet Union, the people known as the Donggan still call themselves the Hui, like the Hui people of China. But to others, to outsiders, they are called Donggan. And it seems that Muslims in Central Asia already referred to Chinese Hui Muslims as the Donggan, even well before their 19th century migration. In the 17th century, at the tail end of the Ming Dynasty, the Kashgarian Sufi master Muhammad Yusuf referred to the Hui people living inside the Ming Empire as the Donggan. One theory for the origin of the name is that it came from Turkic Donan, one who turns, which is comparable to the Chinese Hui, to return. Various derivations from Chinese are possible. Dong Han, Eastern Han, so from the east, the land of the Han Chinese. Dong Gan, Eastern Gansu, Gansu being one of the two provinces that the Hui chiefly came from. And possibly either Dunhuang or Tongguan, the former a city in Gansu, and the latter a city in the province of Shanxi. In any event, as I said, the Hui people within China can trace lineages from various groups who migrated into China. And that was reflected in their language, which included an above average share of loanwords from Persian, Arabic, Turkic, and so on. But after centuries in China, the fact was that their language was largely Chinese, specifically the Shanxi Gansu dialect of Chinese, which was not all that different from Mandarin, based on the Beijing dialect. In fact, because their migration took place in the 19th century, some of the Donggan vocabulary has been frozen in time. They say Huangdi, which literally means emperor, to mean president. And they say Yamen, a Mandarin's office in imperial times, to mean a government office or agency. Although being largely members of the rural poor in pre-modern China, where literacy rate among common citizens was never very high, most of the Dongan people at the time of their migration couldn't write Chinese. And then the Dongan people found themselves living among others who didn't use the Chinese script anyway. So, by the early 20th century, when within China, the Chinese themselves considered switching to an alphabetic system, a parallel move occurred within the Soviet Union to start to write down the Dongan language, largely Chinese, in the Latin alphabet, the Cyrillic alphabet of Russian, or the Arabic alphabet. Incidentally, there had already been a tradition among some Chinese Muslims to write Chinese using Arabic. This was called Xiaojing, or sometimes Xiaojing, literally a child's script or minor script. Anyway, onto this early 20th century scene came Yasir Shivaza. And it's the reason he and the Dongan people make an appearance in Kingdom of Characters. Yasir Shivaza was born in 1906 in the Chui region of northern Kyrgyzstan that so many Dongan people moved to back in the 19th century. His last name corresponded to the Chinese Shuazi, meaning the 10th child. As a child, he was sent to the village Quranic school to study Arabic, which could easily have put him on the path to becoming a mullah. After the 1917 revolution, his father, Zhouzhouzi, or Jumaza, joined the Communist Party and served as chairman of the village Soviet. In 1924, Yasir Shivaza went to study at the Tatar Institute for Education of the Minority Group in Tashkent, which now is the capital of Uzbekistan. Professor Jing Tzu, in her book, dramatizes this moment as the beginning of the first Latinization scheme of spoken Chinese in history, taking place outside of China and entirely independently of people in China. The story begins on an unremarkable day in 1924, when, at the end of a dirt road 18 miles east of Frunze, a young Chinese Muslim embarked on a journey from the tiny village where he grew up. Yasir Shivaza was leaving home for the first time. His eyes sparkled with defiance, and his thick head of hair was brushed back, leaving two high cheekbones in plain view. Frunze, of course, is now Bishkek, the capital of Kyrgyzstan. At this time, Arabic script was widely used across Central Asia and the Caucasus and beyond to record Turkic languages. Yasir Shivaza, having attended Quranic school, knew to write Dongan Chinese in Arabic, like the Xiaojing in China. But maybe Arabic wasn't the best option for Turkic languages. In 1926, in Baku, Azerbaijan, under the auspices of the Soviet government, experts from across the Soviet Union met to discuss whether to switch Turkic and other Central Asian languages to the Latin alphabet. Turkic speakers themselves acknowledged that Arabic might not be well suited to recording Turkic speech. At the same time, they resisted using the Cyrillic alphabet of Russian, fearing that it represented another step toward Russian cultural domination. So the Latin alphabet could be the compromise choice. Professor Jing Tzu writes, "What the delegates did not know was that the Soviet language planners had bigger goals for Kyrgyzstan's Donganese. They saw it as a possible wedge for opening a door to the East. We must not forget that behind that small nation, we have great national mass in the East. Behind them stands China. And beyond it stood the 20 million people of Korea, who would be the next converts to the Soviet Union. Through China's lost ethnic tribe, Russia intended to vastly extend its influence in Asia through linguistic assimilation. The Baku Congress decided to Latinize. Shivaza and his classmates in Tashkent were recruited to help to devise the Latinization system for Donganese. Shivaza, who could still speak the language of the Hui, as though he were a young Muslim from Gansu or Shanxi, saw this as an opportunity to preserve Dongan language and culture. Professor Jing Tzu writes, Donganese had one less tongue than Mandarin, but its Gansu tones were unmistakable and understandable to a Mandarin speaker. Shivaza captured them as closely as he could in a draft of a Donganese Latin alphabet using the new Turkic alphabet as a template. Shivaza's system was unique among the Latinization proposals because it had originated with true native speakers of the language being Latinized. It proved influential with the Soviet linguists from the government, who then took the project out of Shivaza's hands. Through those Soviet linguists, some of whom then worked with communist scholars in China, Shivaza's system exercised some influence on how the Chinese ended up developing Pinyin, the now ubiquitous system of transliterating Chinese into the Latin alphabet. But ultimately, the Soviets failed to persuade the Chinese to abandon their age-old character-based writing system. And the Soviets themselves, by the 1940s, had decided to impose the Cyrillic alphabet on the Dongan language. Yasir Shivaza participated in that second change as well, serving on the committees to design the Dongan Cyrillic alphabet that was ultimately introduced in 1953. He also became a teacher, writer, editor, poet, and translator. He co-founded the Huiming Bao, literally Hui People's Newspaper, written in Dongan, which is to say in transliterated Chinese. Still published in Bishkek, it's the world's only Dongan language paper. Yasir Shivaza served as the paper's editor-in-chief for many years. He translated a number of Russian classics into Dongan, including works by Pushkin, Lermontov, Tolstoy, Chekhov, and Gorky, as well as works by Ukrainian, Belarusian, and Kyrgyz writers. And he wrote and published many poems and stories of his own in Dongan, Russian, and Kyrgyz. He died in 1988 in Bishkek. And that is the fascinating story of Yasir Shivaza and the Dongan people and language. This has been MODG. Thank you for listening.